Here to talk about Colorado in the transfer portal madness that has been taking place here about the last week and a half now, Brian. The last time we did one of these analysis videos, it was, I believe, New Year's Eve. So how is 2026 treating you so far?
Well, it's been busy because I keep writing all these transfer portal stories and updating them, and it feels like every time you post a story about, oh, this transfer's in today, well, I got to update it because there's another one. So I think for a solid 7 or 8 days, there's been multiple transfers coming in, which is good. The Buffs obviously have a lot of spots to fill, but it's made it busy. How about you?
Yeah, same thing. Juggling a bunch of stuff in life and the transfer portal, like literally every second I have that I can be
Right.
behind my computer. I'm churning out content and yeah, it's been a whirlwind here. 31 transfer commits for the Buffaloes. That doesn't include their JUCO transfers, DeMatepeco Jr. and walk-on long snapper Trey Young. They're quickly filling in a lot of gaps, Brian.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I posted something last night on X that it was about, I think it was January 2nd that I posted they've only got 39 scholarship guys on the roster for this next year. Well, now they're up to about 70. So, and they're almost done, filling this roster. So, it happens fast. They clearly were targeting certain areas, which we'll get into, but it happens fast. And, when there was the mass exodus, of all these guys leaving, I kept putting out there like, look, it stings with seeing some of these guys go out there, but I guarantee you they're going to bring in a bunch of guys. They're going to bring in a bunch of guys that fans are excited about, and that's what's happened. I think there's a lot of guys on this list that fans are excited to see.
Coming off 3-9 and having a group that obviously underperformed not only on the field, but just in terms of the overall character of that transfer class they brought in as a collective last year. They changed their objective a little bit, and there was more emphasis, Brian, going into the transfer window this year of we got to find guys that love this game, not what the game provides them. We've heard Coach Prime say that, but there was an extra emphasis on that. And Coach Prime's been more hands-on than really he has in the past during these transfer windows. So those are some of the things that I feel like have been kind of the hallmarks of their philosophy going into this. I thought it was going to be pretty dramatic, the difference in terms of how much Group of Five and FCS recruiting they've done this cycle versus last year. It's not quite as dramatic. Last year they brought in 34 transfers during those two windows. And six of them were either FCS or D2 transfers. The D2 transfer was tight end Zach Atkins. They brought in 13 Group of Five transfer commits last year and 15 transfers from the Power Four ranks last year. Those numbers are a little bit more towards the G5 ranks as we fill out this class, but not dramatically, Brian. This year so far, 9 transfer commits from the FCS ranks. So compare that to 6 a year ago. 13 transfer commits from the G5 ranks. Same number as last year with a few shorter commitments. And then this year they have 9 transfer commits from the Power Four ranks. Last year they had 15. So a little bit less from the Power Four ranks, but it's not as dramatic as I thought. I thought it was going to be a lot more G5 than last year.
Yeah, and you mentioned a little bit less, but they're not done yet, and that
Yeah.
number could get up to 15 as well, depending on who's coming in. And I think we might have all thought it was gonna be dramatic that way because the first like 15, well, I don't know what came over the numbers you just said, but like it seemed like the first 15 or so transfers they added were FCS and G5 guys, and there was no Power Five guys the first like 3 4 days, and then all of a sudden the Power Four guys started coming. You're like, oh. That guy's pretty good. Yeah, that guy's
Yeah.
pretty good. So yeah, I think I don't know why it turned out that way that like all the first wave was those FCS and G5. But I will say too that when you look at it, there's a different caliber of FCS and G5 guys than there was last year. Not just the numbers. I feel like this is a group of guys that more so than the previous years were all conference at their previous school. Or they were captains, things like that. It seems like there's just a higher caliber. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, I definitely think that, and especially when you watch film of some of these guys, like they're ball players. In the past, some of those FCS G5 editions, it was kind of taking a risk. It was like you see the promise maybe in this aspect of their game, but a lot of these guys are pretty well-rounded players that are coming up from those ranks, and it certainly makes sense to have more FCS editions this year, given that your new OC is coming from Sacramento State, and he knows that he's got some skill players, a couple running backs, a slot receiver coming in that know his system, an offensive lineman that looks like he's going to be, somebody that can compete at least for a backup spot for Colorado this coming year. So it makes sense that they would have more FCS signees from Sacramento State, but it seems like they've been pretty selective with that. They haven't necessarily tried to just take the entire roster there from the Hornets roster up to the FBS level. That would not be good. So it seems like Marion had a good plan of guys that he knew could translate to this level. And you look at some of those skill players that are coming up. I mean, they were pretty highly regarded guys, coming out of high school. So it's not like as big a reach as maybe it might sound when you say you take an FCS guy.
And look, I think we ought to note too that Marion's coming from an FCS school, but he has spent a lot of his career at the Power Five level, and FBS level. I mean, he was at UNLV before that, which is not Power Five, but years at Texas and Pitt. So he knows what Power Four football players look like, and so I think that's what gives me confidence with this, is that he knows what these guys should look like, and he knows these guys from Sacramento State that he coached. He knows, this guy can play at this level. He needs to be up here. And so I don't think he's going to bring somebody here that he worked with that he doesn't truly believe can play here. And so that gives me confidence. If he's bringing his guys over, he knows they can play. And especially at things like running back, where two running back additions from Sacramento State. And obviously running back is a huge part of this offense. If he likes these guys, thinks they can work here, then I trust that. And so I think I don't mind FCS guys. I mean, there's a lot of talent in the FCS level. And again, when you look at the caliber of these guys, there's a lot of guys that were first team all conference, or they were I think, I can't remember who it was, but like defensive freshman of the year in his conference and things like that. So there's a lot of award-winning guys coming up from those lower levels.
They have Isaac Wilson transferring at a quarterback. They've got Dominic Ponder, a walk-on. They just signed a late 2026, or got a commitment from a late 2026 quarterback recruit, and they'll sign him in early February. Do you think they're set at quarterback now with those four arms?
Well, I mean, last year, would they have five? So maybe I
Maybe
would
another
think
walk-on, a quality
maybe another
walk-on.
walk-on. I can't imagine. I think it'd be hard to get another scholarship guy. I mean, frankly, I thought I was surprised they were able to get somebody the caliber of Isaac Wilson, and not that, there's probably some Buff fans and maybe Ute fans who would say, I don't know what the caliber is there, because he struggled a little bit as a true freshman, but he's a little bit older now, and there's a lot of talent there. I thought Isaac Wilson would be a guy that might go somewhere where he was a sure starter somewhere, but he's coming in here. I know they've told him he'll compete for the starting job. I think most people are going to pencil in Juju Lewis there, but Isaac Wilson's got a shot to compete here, and if nothing else, he's going to put pressure on Julian Lewis, and I like that they bring him in, because I think that's a high quality backup, if nothing else. That I think year one two is pretty solid now.
I have faith that Julian Juju Lewis is going to do everything he needs to do this offseason, because we saw the maturation process firsthand this last fall. It was really, well, even the last year, because he was an early enrollee. It was I was a little bit concerned about, like, is this guy going to be a guy that can step up and lead this offense? And then over the course of time, once he got that starting gig, it seemed like he felt comfortable, even as a true freshman, of being a little bit more vocal, and that's going to be taken to another level this offseason. But yeah, I mean, you got to have competition. You can't have Julian Lewis feeling comfortable every day, right? You got to have another talented arm in that room to kind of push him.
Yeah, and By the way, the reason why I say I'm surprised they were able to get somebody of that caliber is in this day and age with the portal era, I think most quarterbacks would look at Colorado and say, well, they got their guy with Julian Lewis. Why would I want to go there? Guys want to start. And so, but I agree with you on Julian Lewis. And the other thing is, shout out to, Bucky, with the well-off videos, where we got to see, this means an awful lot to Julian Lewis, the way he was really down after that loss at West Virginia. This means a lot to him. He's going to put a lot of work into it. I fully expect him to be a different guy that we see in the spring and in the fall, and be more, polished and more game ready. And if you have that, and you got an Isaac Wilson that's got some experience, that if something happens with Julian, he can go in there and be a starter. I think that's pretty good. And then you got a young freshman that Keneal Sweetwine, I think as I say his name. He's a late signing, but he, I don't know his story, Adam, but was originally committed to BYU, signed with NC State, and then like 3 weeks later asked out of his agreement with NC State. So I'm not sure what happened there, but that's a kid that was clearly wanted by some other Power Five schools, and put up some big numbers in high school.
Yeah, he's got some pretty good tape too. And you go down the eligibility chart and Brian, it kind of feels like they're like a lot of positions is one guy away, right? At this point. Like you mentioned, there are about 70 scholarships. It's like most positions need one more guy.
I mean, as we go through it, quarterback, I'm like, maybe one more guy there. Running back, I probably want one or two more guys there. Tight end, you probably want another one or two. Offensive line, you probably need a few, right? Probably three or four. But yeah, I mean, most of these positions, I'm not sure there's a spot you look at and say, yep, they're totally set there. Other than receiver, I would say receiver is one that I don't think they need anybody else. I think they got a pretty good stockpile of talent there. But what do you think?
Well, it sounds like they're going to get Texas receiver transfer DeAndre Moore Jr., which would be a good get. And he could be a starter at receiver. So I think, yeah, receiver, if you can get a Moore Jr., like an elite guy, don't reach for a receiver at this point. Yeah, I would agree with that from that sense. I could see Houston center transfer Demetrius Hunter being an addition there on the O line, edge transfer. Andrew Zock from Mercer, an FCS All-American last year. I could see him being one of their additions. You've got Smith Snowden, the cornerback. He's got family ties to Boulder, and I could see him, potentially coming in and being their top cornerback in 2025. So you get those four guys right there, and then you're just kind of filling in some gaps here. I mean, they've done a really impressive job since January 2nd, the last 10 days.
And a lot of people down when, guys like Taufik Byard went in the transfer portal. And then Carter Stoutmeyer goes in the portal. I know he didn't have the greatest start to last year, but that one surprised me because of his relationship with Coach Prime. And then all of a sudden, right after that, they get Randon Fontanette and Boo Carter. And you're like, oh, they're pretty set at safety right now. So, and then you have Nate Mitchell from New Mexico State. I was texting you last night. They're probably set with those three guys. I mean, there's your safeties and nickel, right?
Yeah, but I think you need more depth at safety, especially when
Yeah, for
you talk
sure.
about Boo Carter being nickel. So you're going to have three of those guys out there. That's a position I'd like to see two more guys come in.
Yeah, for sure. You need depth there, but as far as that starting group, I guess what I mean is, everybody, you lose a Taufik Byard, and it's like, oh man. I mean, this is. But then the guys they just added, you're like, yeah, that's okay. I think all of a sudden you feel pretty good about your safety, your starting safety group, and that. And I mean, you look at the DBs right now in that starting group. I don't know, at corner. I mean, Justin Eaglin and Emery Floyd, are those your starters? I mean, R.J. Johnson's there as well. Mekhari Vickers is going to compete. So I think the top of a lot of these position groups, I'm starting to feel pretty good about.
Yeah, what you mentioned Boo Carter there. What are your thoughts there? I was thinking about this the other day, and if you have a locker room that is struggling from a leadership standpoint, a guy like that can be toxic. But if they feel good about kind of the continuity they're going to be able to build with these guys, and I know again, the objective was guys that love the game as opposed to what the game provides for them. So if that truly pans out the way they hope it Hope it does. I don't think one guy can ruin a locker room. Like, remember they brought in Juwan Mitchell from Arizona State. He didn't mess anything up, even though he got kicked off the team after being a starter for a couple weeks. Do you think that Boo Carter was a good take, or are you concerned about that?
A little of both. I think it was a really good take because of the talent. I mean, he's clearly, I mean, he was, first team, freshman team in the SEC 2 years ago. But then obviously had a lot of issues at Tennessee, where he was, apparently not showing up to meetings, things like that in the off season or practices or whatever. And, never won his starting job back and then gets kicked off the team with a few games left. And so that's a concern. It has to be a concern, but I think sometimes maybe a kid needs a new environment, and maybe he didn't get along with certain people at Tennessee, and a new environment, really changes things. And who knows if if being around Coach Prime helps him. We sort of thought those same things with Juwan Mitchell, right? Like, all right, maybe get in a new environment. Things will be different. They weren't. They weren't at all. And so,
I hate to be mean, but everything I've heard about him, he's just a knucklehead. There was no fixing that. I think Boo Carter can mature during college.
And I mean, look, Juwan Mitchell was a senior at that point. I mean, he was on his last shot. Boo Carter's is still a young player, that he's got some time. And this is always shot number two, right? And so I think you certainly take a chance on a guy like that, especially when you're in CU spot where, it's not like you got Texas Tech money and you can just go throw it at the best players. I think you have to take shots with guys like this that are talented that need a new environment. And so in that case, I think it's a really good get.
Well, we've seen what happens when guys don't show up to meetings under Coach Prime. It is usually a pretty quick exit. So, yeah, you hope he.
He even suspended Shiloh back at Jackson State when he showed up late for a meeting, coming back from a break. So, not even his own son was immune from that. So, yeah, Coach Prime does not like that. We'll see if Boo Carter shows up to every meeting or not.
Before we hit record, we were going down our eligibility charts, kind of comparing them, and it's very clear that eligibility is almost as fluid as water in college football right now.
Yes, because my number is different from yours, and neither one of them is right or wrong. Because there's some guys on the list, that you're putting on there that I haven't yet, because they might have another year left. A Simeon Price, who you've got on your list, I don't right now, but he's going to need a medical hardship, and it sounds like he might get it. That seems like an easy one to put back on there. But there's a few other guys that are like, okay, how does he have another year left? But he's saying he does. And so, but will it be here? I don't know where this eligibility chart lies. I'll just say that. But I think we're both around the 70 mark.
Well, I was telling you that when Cooper Loveless hit the portal after 7 years of college, I just threw up my hands and said, I don't know how to chart this stuff anymore. This doesn't make any sense to me.
And for me, the one before that was Reginald Hughes. I'm like, how is the only reason he was at Colorado was because he was part of that Diego Pavia JUCO rule, and he had 1 year left because of that. So he thought he was done with college eligibility. I think UTSA, no, he was Jacksonville State. He thought he was done at the end of that 24 season. The ruling comes in, he has another year, he goes to CU, and now he's in the portal trying for another year. And I think he had declared for the draft a few days before that. And so for me, it was Reginald Hughes saying, I don't know how he has another year, but apparently he does, or at least he's hoping for.
So there we've talked about this in the past, Brian, about the thought that college football will eventually go to a 5-for-5 model instead of the redshirt ruling. There have been some guys that are have sued the NCAA over the redshirt situation right now. I found it interesting, Brian, that there were the Power Four commissioners were fighting for the redshirt rule to stay in existence. What do you think the reason is behind that?
To keep it the way it is.
But you're still allowing them to play four games. If it's a bowl game, five games, like just go 5-for-5. It's so much easier if you do that. And then have the medical hardship waiver very like a certain number of games you had to who have missed during your career, and maybe you could get a 6 year if that's the case. It doesn't seem like it should be this complicated.
Right. My initial thought to that would be, well, I think they like having that redshirt year for development, but you can still do that. You know, it's still 5 years, right? And so
Yeah.
you can still do that. And just because they're 5 and 5 doesn't mean you have to play them, you know, 12 games. It's, you know, there's a lot of guys that, you know, go 3 years and never suit up or never, you know, get into a game because they're still developing. So yeah, I don't really know the reasoning for that. I think 5 for 5 would, you know, it, I don't know. It would certainly change a lot of things for a lot of players, because you would have some players that, you know, get that full 5th year and they play 5 full years. Maybe it's because, you know, a 5 for 5, I think, hurts high school kids, at least initially, because now all of a sudden, if you pass that and you have a bunch of guys that can stay, well, now there's fewer opportunities for a high school kid right now. And so it goes both ways for me.
That's just
I get.
1 year, though. You're going to get through that pretty quick. I mean,
It,
how
well, yeah,
could they had all those COVID rulings and all these other waivers that have been submitted. It's been kind of hurting prep recruiting anyway.
I think you're right. It's essentially a year. I think it has a lingering effect for probably 2, 3 years, and then it's that group in, you know, 2, 3 years that would, you know, that settle in. You'd understand it, but I think, I don't know. I think there's a lot of players right now that, you know, they're out of eligibility and they're fighting for more. And you got these young guys underneath that are ready for their turn, that, you know, they could be impacted because so and so got the waiver, you know, and now they don't have an opportunity to play. And so I think it goes both ways. I think it's tough on both sides. I get why these kids want to stay because there's money now. They're making money in college, and you know, why wouldn't you want to stay? I mean, we were talking about Chandler Morris, the quarterback. I think he's at Virginia now. I'm not sure where he is. He's played for, you know, a whole bunch of different teams, but he had his waiver denied, and I think he would have been a 7th or 8th year quarterback. Well, he's been a starter at like 3 different places, and I get why he wants to stay because that's not an NFL guy, and you know, he could make $1 million plus, $2 million by being a starter somewhere else. So why not try for that? But at the same time, it's like, move on, kid. I mean, there's a lot of these high school quarterbacks that are and young guys that are ready to take their turn too. And college was never designed for this to be your job for a decade. And so I get why some of these guys are pushing for it, but at some point, move on. You're done with college. Move on.
One guy I hope doesn't have to move on is Zarian McGill, because he told me he's coming back to Boulder today, going to train with Coach Swayze, get ready for Pro Timing Day. But if that 5 for 5 ruling comes down, he said he'd come back and play for the Buffaloes. He was a very solid center for Colorado this past year, battled through
Yeah.
some injuries. That would be a like almost like a blue chip transfer addition if that ruling does go through.
Yeah, and really, in a disappointing season, I thought he was one of the nice surprises for this team because he wasn't even a full-time starter the previous year. I think it was at Louisiana Tech. He wasn't even the full-time starter there. Comes in, he's competing with Cooper Loveless in fall camp, and takes the job. And did he lead CU in snaps played on offense?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he, I mean, he, you never really heard about Zarian McGill because he was just solid. You know, there was the previous year, there was all those snap issues, right? And there was never snap issues with him. I thought he was really solid. He graded out fairly well. So yeah, if he came back and you just plug him back in at center, you're good there.
Yep, no doubt. Well, we've been recording for what, over a half an hour, and gosh, we got to get back to making sure that there haven't been no any more commitments for Colorado since we started.
I do want to say real quick, you know, we were talking about a lot of the incoming guys, all the outgoing guys. There's what 29 guys that left. For me, it's nice to see. I think more than half of those. I think it's 15 now have committed to new schools. To me, it's great to see these guys finding new homes, and all of them so far have been FBS schools, and some of them even gone up. You know, from you would say it's an upgrade from Colorado, but, you know, come off of 3 and 9. But a lot of these guys have sort of upgraded where they are. And so hopefully they play. But to me, it's great to see guys like, you know, Terrell Timmons, you know, land in a new spot. And Dallin Hayden, now they're obviously, you know, there's a connection there with Corey Phillips down in Memphis for some of those guys. But they're all landing in spots. So I think that's great to see because a lot of the narrative, and it's going to happen around the country, there's a lot of guys that go in the portal and can't get out.
Yeah, and I think Colorado fans will enjoy cheering for some of those guys as well, as long as the Buffs have success next year, right? It's a lot
Right.
easier to stomach guys that have defected going off somewhere and having success if they're able to bring this new group in and have success. It's a different group, kind of a different makeup than last year. You do sense that there is this kind of emphasis on just finding dogs in like just
Yeah.
ball players, as opposed
Yeah.
to, like Jaheim Otis still gets like an 87 rating as a transfer on 24/7 Sports. And I'm going like, he's rated higher than a bunch of guys on CU's commit list that like have done way more at the college level, even if
Right.
it's not at the Power Four level. So, I like the makeup of this group. There are some gaps to fill though still.
Yeah, there definitely are, and looking forward to seeing, where they fill those. But I love the fact this roster's coming together, and would you say we did our last video was less than 2 weeks ago, and I think that the feeling around Colorado is much better than it was 2 weeks ago. Because
Oh,
two
yeah.
weeks ago, all it was everybody, and that's the cycle, right? That's every year. It's the first wave is everybody leaving, and the sky is falling, and then the next wave is guys transferring in, and you get excited. And so, bottom line is, and that's why I posted, a few weeks ago, sort of, it's pretty jokingly, on Twitter. I said, at this point, I don't even care who's coming and going. Just give me a roster on March 1st. And that's kind of where I am. It's like, yeah, it's fun seeing these guys come in, but when the dust settles, what does this roster look like?
It's like back in the day, being a college football fan was being on the standard roller coaster. Now you've got the roller coaster that spins upside down and does all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
It is a daily thing now, which I guess from a coverage standpoint is good. Spring ball should be a lot of fun. There's going to be a lot of
Yeah.
competitiveness across the board. Obviously, we'll get more into that as we get closer to spring practices. But Brian, it was good catching up with you, and then let's maybe do this again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Adam.
Okay.